Hey, family, I'm Alex. I'm at it.
Alex.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Thank you. My clean date is January 26, 2009. I have a sponsor. I sponsor some crazy guys. I work steps. I go to meetings regularly. I do service. I have a home group, and I say that. And I'm definitely a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I say that because I spent a lot of time in here as a guest. And, you know, I know what it's like to put my whole life into a spoon or a stem. All right, I know what it's like to abuse the people closest to me in my active addiction. There's no right or wrong. There's no loyalty. There's no hygiene. There's no functioning and holding the job. Every day is just the same thing over and over. It's wake up, upset that I did my wake up, and try to scramble $20 through whatever means necessary so I could try to get enough in me to get well, so I could try to get some real money and go get high. And it's just the same thing day in and day out and day in and day out. I don't have relationships. I take hostages and I abuse the people that allow me to get closest to them, usually my family, because they're the ones that don't call the cops on me and keep on opening the door, right? I get out of treatment, I get out of facility, and I'm, you know, make amends on the payphone or whatever first day, and I come out and make all these different promises about how it's going to be different this time, and they believe it every time because they just want to see their kid do better, their brother do better, you know, anything, and believe it. And then that's, you know, when I'm using, that's when I got you, you know. And I come in, I plot and I plan and I do what I got to do. So my active addiction essentially is just, I'll do whatever I take to get what I need out of you all day, every day, until you break and until you finally can't take enough that you have to turn your back on me and walk away, and it breaks your heart. And that's what we do in here, you know. And I started using it at a young age. I was hanging out with some other kids that were hanging out with high school kids. We were like 12 or 13 years old, you know. And growing up, I'm from the Montgomery area, and I grew up in Rockville. And, you know, I have a younger brother who's a few years younger than me. And, you know, growing up, I just always felt uncomfortable in my own skin. I never felt funny enough, smart enough, handsome enough, athletic enough. I just never felt as cool as the other kids did. And I always kind of had this, like, self-induced weight of the world on my shoulders where I just felt different and uncomfortable with myself. And I was a really, really short kid. I thought my ears were too big. I thought my nose was too big. I didn't like the clothes that I wore compared to other kids. And I got introduced to a drug when I was around, like, 12 or 13 years old. And I did it, and I loved it. And I stopped caring about anything, really. I just felt okay with me, and I felt okay with the world around me, and I stopped giving a shit if anybody else, you know, thought those things about me too. And I fell in love with it, really, and I chased that feeling, and I managed to squeak through high school. My father works at University of Maryland, and he helped me get in there, and I just thought that's kind of what you're supposed to do. And when I was like 18 years old at the time, and I met a guy named JT, who was like the Van Wilder of weed and cocaine sales at the University of Maryland. And he had a Ducati, and he had tons of money and tons of drugs, and he had the smoking hot girlfriend, and he had everything that I wanted. And I said, dude, I'm going to do what you do to get what you got, you know. And so I had this like 6-month successful drug dealing career, and, you know, found out I can do as much coke in one day as I can sell easily, and it kind of went downhill from that. And the way I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, right, is I was shooting a drug called Special K. And I got cut in a psychosis for 2.5 weeks, so essentially a trip. And I came to in the psych ward in Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. All right, I had this kind of like 2.5 week psychosis with mental, you know, video, you know, audio and visual hallucinations. And I came to in this psych ward in front of a mirror and in front of my mother naked. And I had this tattoo of a teddy bear pulling a toy sailboat on my ass cheek. And I didn't know how I'd gotten there, and I ended up going back to that tattoo shop later, and there was like a whole picture on the wall of, you know, them laughing at me and everything. My mom was looking at me like, you better never get locked up, boy, with that dumb shit on your ass. And you know, and that was my first time in treatment. And I was in the psych ward, and I just wanted to get out of there because I was obsessed with selling drugs and getting high, and I loved it. I love drugs. I love the way they make me feel. I love the ability, and I like obsessing, and I'm in love and infatuated with the idea that I can control how I feel using anything, right? I like to have that kind of control, So, you know, my parents are freaking out. Their kid's IVing drugs, and they sent me to an outpatient treatment. And, you know, I had to drop out of school. I wasn't doing anything there anyways. And so I went to this outpatient treatment center where, you know, they basically pump you full of maintenance medications and stuff. And you're supposed to go to meetings on the weekend. And that was how I first got exposed to NA. That was in 2004. And I went to my first meeting. Fresh Start, Shady Grove in Rockville area. And it was this huge basement meeting. There were like 230 people. And I was an 18-year-old kid, and I saw a bunch of 40 and 50 and 60-year-olds happy and smiling and passing around baskets and hugging each other. And I didn't want anything to do with any of y'all because I just thought it was, I don't know. You guys looked happy, and you didn't look like you wanted to get high, and you didn't look like you were selling anything, so I really had nothing to talk to you about, you know, and I just wanted to go out and do what I do, right, because I love the game, and I just wanted to get drugs, you know, get money and sell drugs and chase women and do all that kind of stuff. And for me, the disease of addiction, right, you know, as we talk about, it's not about the drugs, and in here, it's really not about the clean time either. It's about the amount of spiritual freedom we have. And for me, the disease of self-addiction is low self-worth and self-centered fear, right, and the way it manifests itself in me is obsession and compulsion, right? I'll get something stuck in my head, and I can't stop thinking about it, you know, until I find, you know, until I came here. I never had an answer to that. I never found a way to stop that obsession. And what happens for me, right, is I'll have a thought. It'll circulate a million times. It'll create some feelings. And then because I have a feeling, I'll believe it to be true, and I'll act on it, right? And it's this process that happens like that, and I've been doing it forever. So I find myself continuously in these situations. For me, anytime I put a mind or mood-altering substance, I mean, the exact same thing happens, right? I find myself strung out, sleeping in the woods, right, and begging to get back into the same treatment center that I left early anyways, over and over and over again, and begging to get back into Narcotics Anonymous. And when I came into, you know, I came into 2004 and I got clean in 2009, I spent a good 5 years just in and out of that process and in and out of that process. And every time I'd go to treatment, right, I'd come out, you know, I'd move into an Oxford house or, you know, some kind of, like, clean living situation and figure out who else is using there first so I could throw them under the bus when they catch on because I know I'm going to eventually relapse. And what I'd do is I found myself on the top of this fence for a long time, really kind of wavering between resignation and surrender, right? And for me, the difference is just resignation. It's like, I know I'm an addict. I've never used one of anything my entire life. I never have. I've never been in any kind of denial about that stuff. I was just never willing to do what it takes to get clean. And for me, surrender is like, I know I'm an addict, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. You know, and we're all, you know, in a different process of getting to that point. And a lot of people don't get there, and they die. As we, you know, if you've been around here a little bit, or even just getting here now, I know we've all lost a lot of people. You know what I mean? They get locked up before they get to that point. And, you know, and then some of us get here, you know, and we're blessed with the opportunity to get a momentary, you know, piece of freedom from it. And I spent a lot of time on the top of that fence because I kept on finding myself crawling back in NA because I couldn't stop and wasn't willing to do what it took, but I didn't know any other way to live, you know. And so for me, I mean, I know what it's like to get 30, 60 days underneath my belt and get that momentary freedom, you know, and then, you know, I get out and I'm not willing to take suggestions, you know, and I'm not willing to do what it takes. And eventually I run back into myself, you know what I mean? Because I'm bringing everything I serve, all the coping mechanisms I had on the street, I brought in Narcotics Anonymous with me because those are the things I needed to survive. Violence and anger and dishonesty and manipulation, all those things, I need that to stay well in active addiction. When you bring that into Narcotics Anonymous, there's no place in our new life, right? I can't hold a job and be practicing those principles. I can't have a relationship and be practicing those principles, right? And so I find myself very shortly running into myself. I haven't done any step work, so now I have no coping mechanisms, and I'm not a guy that likes to feel bad. So all it takes is looking at me funny in the meeting, right? A girl rejecting me, anything that kind of hits on that internal tape that says, Alex, you're not good enough. Right, you're not good enough, right? And that's the tape that I've grown up with, and that's the reason why I use, right? Because I got a tape inside of me that says I'm not okay the way that I am. And my brother and I, you know, my mom had the same tape in her, and her mom taught her that tape too. And when we were kids, you know, it's so funny because my mom was really big on we had to like lie to family, friends, and stuff like that about our interests and our hobbies and whatever mom thought was deemed, you know, socially appropriate to their viewpoint. So from a young age, I learned that it wasn't okay to be me, right? Because when I'm 6 years old and my brother's, you know, my brother was like four and he played the drums, and we weren't allowed to tell people that he played the drums because it just wasn't socially appropriate, I guess, in my mom's mind, right? So from this, you know, our hobbies, interests, any music we liked, anything, we had to kind of like make up this narrative about kind of like the kid that she thought was appropriate to tell and brag to other friends about, which was not us by any means. I mean, we were bad little kids, you know. We were doing, I guess, in our minds. And so, anyways, as a young kid, I just learned that, you know, it's not okay to be you, right? And so when I go into, you know, middle school and I'm taking the bus to school and I'm not feeling okay to be me, and I'm in high school and I'm not feeling okay to be me, and then I find something that really makes me not care if I'm a me or not, you know, I'm going to jump to that stuff immediately. And I started coming around in 2004, and I heard the message, and I kept on coming in and out and in and out, and I've been to treatment 14 times, and I'd go into treatment, and I'd come out, and I'd be a little bit more willing to do something I wasn't willing to do before. You know, maybe this time I'll get a sponsor by name, but I'll never call them. Maybe this time I'll pick up a service position. For me, going to meetings and giving out key tags isn't going to keep me clean. You know what I mean? Having a sponsor by name isn't going to keep me clean. I just didn't understand the process. I mean, every time I get inside, we go to treatment, we don't learn new information. You know what I mean? You go to JM, they bring you, you know, jazz program, stuff like that. It's not like we learn new information. It's just, where are we in our process and being able to hear it, and what am I want? You know, what do I want, and what am I willing to do for it? And so every time I'd go back out, you know, it would just get worse. And every time I'd crawl back into that same treatment center, I think, this is it. It can't get lower than this, right? And I'd always, you know, I hate going to treatment, not because of the fear of what it's like to get clean, because I can get clean. Staying clean is the problem, right? But it's just that I get in there, you know, the first 5 or 6 days is fine. They got me pumped full of Valiums and Suboxones and stuff like that. But what happens for me is, like, day 6 or day 7, all that stuff's out of me, and I get this huge hole in my stomach, right? This hole in my gut, and I turn back into that 13-year-old boy, and it's immediately followed by this thought that you just need to get one more, right? And it just comes in waves. How can I get out here and get one more? What do I got to do to get one? Why don't I bring stuff in with me, right? And just starts to circulate and circulate and circulate and circulate. And I didn't understand the concept of honesty and sharing my thoughts, because talking about my feelings and thoughts with other people is just not a part of how, you know, I lived in active addiction, right? It's got to be got, you know, and so, you know, every time I'd call Megan this treatment center, you know, I'd get back out and I'd make the decision, you know, to use, you know, because I'd have some feelings that I couldn't handle. It feels like the weight of my world's on my shoulder. I'm sitting there driving, you know, 60 days clean. I made the decision to use because I got a little money on a Friday or something. I'm driving to the dealer crying because I don't want to use anymore and I don't know how to live, but I just don't know how to not use. I don't know how to just not stop. And so, you know, I'll sitting there, you know, I'll get my little package and I'll go to the meeting, you know, and I'll get there early. There's a meeting near my house on Saturdays at 5:30 in a church. And I used to go to that meeting at, like, you know, noon or 1 o'clock. And I'd sit in the pews and I'd do my fix and I'd, you know, wait for people to get there. And then I kind of pop up and act like I just got into the meeting, like I hadn't been there for 5 hours, nodding out in the back, you know, and, you know, try to put on this whole front to people. And I just, yeah, for me, it's like, I just had nowhere else to go for an NA, you know, besides NA. I had nowhere else to go because, I mean, for me, my active addiction is a very lonely place. There's no, I mean, I had a beautiful codependent relationship for a good portion of it. You know, it's like me and her against the world, you know, no friends, anything like that. And the MO was kind of like, I'll get high and not out, and you make sure nobody robs me, you know what I mean? But you can't talk to any other guys or anything like that, or so I'll lose my mind, right? And we can't have any friends or anything like that, you know, and if you touch any of my drugs, you know what I mean, we're going to have a serious issue. You know what I mean? I'm allowed to do whatever I want to in the meantime. That's a classic NA relationship right here. You know, I ordered the ring on the first date, honestly. Suddenly, you know, it's so crazy, man, you know what I mean, because I got clean and was so desperate to get her back, and, you know, looking in hindsight, I'm like, what is wrong with her for being with a junkie like me in the first place, you know what I mean? I never thought she had an issue, but it's like, so I kept on coming in and out and in and out and in and out, and I got a drawer full of white key tags, and I just thought NA was something for people that weren't as sick as me. I thought it was for people that used other combinations of drugs than I did. I thought, you know, I just thought I was too sick to recover and that I couldn't get it. You know what I mean? And all it came down to is that I just wasn't ready yet. You know what I mean? I wasn't willing yet. I had more research to do, and I just had to hit my bottom. But every time I'd hit a bottom, I thought I was finally there. There's a fucking trap door underneath of it that I'd fall through and find something even lower that I had to do to stay well. You know what I mean? And all the not yets happen and stuff like that. And when I got clean this time, you know, it was the same thing it always was. You know what I mean? I'd had the suicide attempts, I'd had the overdoses, and it wasn't anything like big like that this time happened. It was January. I was sleeping in the woods, probably like 100 yards behind my parents' house, because I didn't want to run into any real homeless people. You know what I mean? And I didn't have any money, I didn't have any car. I'd been up for like 3 days. I was strung out. I wasn't even, you know. I got up to Baltimore, I got my ass beat, you know what I mean? I got sold some drywall, and you know, and then I came back, and then I was real sick, you know, and it was the same thing again, and I begged to come into the same treatment center. By that time, right, I'd been in NA for 5 years, right, regularly. I'm going to meetings, I'm getting high during key tags and stuff like that in the bathroom, but I'm there, you know what I mean? I'm coming to me, I'm smoking boat and coming to me, you know, but I'm there. You know, and it's just because I had no, all my friends were in NA. All my friends are in here. I had a sponsor in here. You know, my sponsor is way past his bedtime, but he's over there. And, you know, he started sponsoring me like 2006, 2007. And I was just so sick and tired of picking up white key tags. I was sick and tired of waiting a car for a dude who said he was going to be there in 30 minutes, like 4.5 hours ago, who knows that I'm sick, right? And I was tired of dealing with guys who only seem to have one name, like Black. I just found myself in the same place that I always do, you know what I mean, which is strung out, alone, smelling like piss, and just begging to get back into the same treatment center, you know, in our little town that everybody goes to, right, where all the people that I know from NA bring meetings into, so I can feel real ashamed when they see me in there again, you know, and it's just the same thing again. And I went in there, and you know, the same thing happened, you know what I mean? I, you know, hole in the gut, the shame, you know, the anger, the disappointment, the hurt, and this time I just went in there and I stayed the whole time, and it came time to get out, and my parents got divorced while I was in there, you know what I mean? I said, hey, we're gonna get separated, and so, you know, in my little junkie mind, I thought that was an opportunity to manipulate my father with some good guilt trips to let me possibly move into wherever he's moving into, so maybe I can get out and get one more. That was like the thought going on in my head, and I told that to my counselor, and they're like, that's a terrible idea. And so I had the option of either going to the shelter, right, or going into a halfway house that's like right down the street from that treatment center. And I called my sponsor and I said, man, you know, what do you think I should do? And he's like, why don't you give the halfway house a try, man? You know, if you don't like it, you do what you always do anyways and just leave and run on self-will, you know? And so I took that suggestion. It was like the first real suggestion I'd ever taken, and it probably saved my life. And I went into that halfway house, and I did what we don't, I mean, I don't hear it that much anymore, but I did what they told me to do, was just shut the fuck up and sit still, right? And just sit still. All right, because I'm a mouthy addict with a lot of things to say, you know what I mean, and some opinions, and they're all right, and yours are wrong, and I got all the answers and stuff like that. And the one thing I couldn't lie about and deny is that I have no experience staying clean and living life like an emotionally mature adult or a man, right? And so what I did to get and stay clean this time, dude, is I just did what I found a group of guys that were predecessors of mine, and they were men, and they worked steps, and they were involved in the program, and they did service, and they helped newcomers, and they did all the stuff we hear about in here in the readings, right? And I just did whatever they told me to do. Anything they told me to do, I did. And I got a little job as a cashier at a grocery store, you know what I mean? And I started learning some principles in there, and I just jumped into the steps. And for me, the program is the steps, right? Which would make sense, because it's a 12-step program, you know? And this is the way I've stayed clean, right? We got to step one. The one thing, you know, I had a sponsor, you know what I mean? I did service, I went to meetings and stuff, but the one thing I couldn't grasp the concept of was honesty. I just couldn't get honest with another man about my thoughts and feelings. So I'd get that thought about wanting to use, and I'd tell him afterwards, you know what I mean? I'd get that thought about, you know, I was so insecure when I was new. I was full of self. I was angry. I was full of self-hatred. I had no self-worth. You know, I was embarrassed to get a cup of coffee in the meeting because I thought everybody was looking at me, and I just was so uncomfortable in my own skin. And I needed to start sharing these thoughts with people, right? I needed to start sharing all these great ideas and get out, you know, somebody would be looking at me funny and make me want to use, right? I'd feel rejection I want to use. I feel hurt I want to use. I feel angry I want to use, you know. I feel shame. I was just filled with shame, and I had to share all this stuff. And And so for the first step for me was, you know, it wasn't about admitting that I was powerless. I know I'm an addict. I've known that for a long time. All the evidence in my life shows that, right? All the evidence in my life are valid truths that I can't argue, right? But I need to, in the moment, clean, start sharing what's going on in my head with people, right? Otherwise, I can't get any help if my mouth's closed. And so I started really doing that. And, it's like everything else in here, it's been a process, you know what I mean? And I was just so used to lying. I'd lie about everything, you know, I'd lie about anything because I didn't know how to be honest on a consistent basis at all. And I started working step two, and that was pretty easy too, right? I got a bunch of great ideas, and they're all wrong, right? All my ideas are based upon the coping mechanisms that I had when I was out there, right? So I have no idea how to live life like an emotionally mature adult. I have no idea how to live life clean, right? So I need to start opening my mouth and running all these decisions by people and all these thoughts by people and start asking for help, right? For men that are working steps in my life. And step three for me, right, is just taking those suggestions, right? Because it's my will versus, you know, self-will and God's will, right? And my will normally says, you know, especially when I was new, cut corners, lie, do, you know, cheat, steal, do whatever you got to do to get what it is that I think I need, right? Or, you know, I always, you know, think I'm going to lose something I have, or I'm fearing something I'm, you know, I think I need it. And I open my mouth about these situations coming up and, you know, issues I had with other people in the program, issues I created with other people in the program, issues I'd project happened with other people in the program, because I make stuff up in my head that never happened, you know, and somebody look at me funny, and it's like, you know, an issue, somebody's mad, it's always about me, right? My whole life's about me and how this is going to affect myself, right? So my self-centeredness runs deep, because, you know, it always has, and so I start, you know, so the first three steps really got me comfortable being clean. It created the foundation for me in here to get in service, right? It created the foundation for me in here to start building relationships with other people in NA, right? The more honest I am with my predecessors, the more I begin to experience, you know, the beauty of intimacy with other men, right? The ability to not feel so alone as I always was in my active addiction, right? And I start little by little, right? Those step two issues are real hard for me, right? But I put a little bit out there, right? Just a little bit, a simple, small decision, right? And I take it and see what happens, right? And eventually I stopped waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? Because for me, NA, right, is a place in the men in here, right? That's the way I see my higher power, is something I can always turn to. It's never steered me wrong, right? I can never say that doing the next right thing is the wrong thing to do, right? So a lot of my program for me, right, step three, real simple, right? I make thousands of decisions every day. And is the next decision, the next right thing to do, is it going to hurt me or somebody else? Is it going to help me stay clean? And I just had to practice that and practice that and practice that. I'm practicing honesty in one, and open-mindedness in two, and willingness in three. And these are things that are foreign to me, but just like all the other spiritual principles in here, they weren't facets of my personality, but eventually, if I practice them long enough, they stop being something I'm practicing because my sponsor's telling me to and I want to stay clean. I'm desperate to do whatever it takes and not go back to that lifestyle. And eventually they become facets of my personality and I become an honest man, right? I become an open-minded person because I'm having the positive consequences that happen in my life from taking other people's suggestions versus the usually, you know, negative consequences that come from my own self-will and doing all that I want to, right? And I had to bump my head a few times in here, not doing the next right thing, right? And then facing those feelings, you know, and freaking out, you know, for that to happen. So I got a little bit of time in here, right? I got to step four, five, and six, right, where I really start to address the exact nature of what's going on with me. Step four really allowed me to look at, you know, who I'd been and who I am now and who I wanted to be. And I started seeing all these patterns of low self-worth and self-centered fear and low self-worth and self-centered fear. And really the way I act on those things and the masks I put up, right, and just the different ways I act out through like jealousy or lust or, you know, or any of these other things to just cover up that insecure, you know, fearful little boy, you know, that I came in here as. And, you know, by the time I got to step four, I wasn't like a really fearful thing in step five because my sponsor, he'd been my sponsor for years at that point, right? It wasn't like there were a lot of secrets between us or any, you know, super bad thing that I'd done. It's just I still carried a lot of that shame around with me. And what I found in here, right, is that step four and five really create a map for me, right, through the patterns that I consistently see that show up in my life that keep me running into myself, right? And those are my defects. And I get to six, and he's straight asleep. That's okay, man. It's late. And all right, it's all right. And in step six, right, I took all the information and data that I got in step four, right, all these defects, right, all the things that I use and keep me consistently having issues with other people in here and issues in my life and keep me using, right? Because if I don't address the exact nature of why I use in the first place, I'll continue to use, right? Because same addict will use again. And I started looking at these things, and I started looking at just the different tentacles and way that I act out on these things, right? And I started, it's really hard to work on the problem if you don't know what the problem is. Right, and step 4 and 5 really gave me the data to start looking at that stuff and actually look at the definitions of what these things are and look at the ways I act in my life so I can start seeing myself coming. Right? Because I keep on running into myself over and over and over again as the same guy and wondering, you know, why this situation always turns out bad. Why can't I, you know, maintain a relationship? You know, why can't I do X, Y, and Z in here? You know, it's because you're still acting out on dishonesty. You're still acting out on fear. You're still acting out on judgment or gossip or whatever the situation is. And, you know, step 7, you know, I found myself in a place where there were certain ways I acted out on low self-worth and self-centered fear that I just can't stop doing by acknowledging and being aware of, right? And that's where I really got to turn to my higher power and my network and the people come here before me, you know, and really just get humble. And step 7 is a funny step, right? Because I struggled with the idea of what humility was for such a long time, right? And I finally just came to the idea that, you know, humility is just—it's more of a state, really, for me, of good spiritual condition. But it's just being who I—it's being who Alex is, no more, no less, right? I've gotten to a place where I start to be a little bit comfortable with myself, right? I'm not so worried about having to pick up tomorrow and using again, right? It's more just kind of like, you know, how am I not going to be an asshole today, right? How can I be the best version of myself today? Because, you know, how can I be a good brother and a son and a husband and all these things that I could never do when I was using because I just can't show up for people. I could never show up in any of these relationships and I couldn't show up in any of those roles. And step 7, you know, for me, humility is like, I do certain things every day to stay clean that I did when I got in here to maintain my spiritual conditioning, right? I talk to other members of Narcotics Anonymous, and I go to meetings regularly, and I have honest conversations, and I talk about what's going on with me, and I do service, and I reach out, and I help newcomers. And when I do those things on a daily basis, right, I give myself the best shot to be the 100% version of myself. Right? And the days that I fall short are the days that I get some really great ideas in my head about cutting corners, right? And I'm starting to feel fear, and I start obsessing about things, and I stop being so free in here. And so I started, you know, 4, 5, and 6 really started getting me comfortable with myself. And 7, 8, and 9, I was still carrying all this shame around. I was still carrying all this guilt around the stuff that I did. I'm still thinking of myself as a piece of crap. And I, you know, I had stuff I did a lot of dirt in my active addiction. I hurt a lot of people. And step 8 was simply, I'm just writing down and I'm looking at my part in things, you know. And step 4 was really kind of like my first introduction into looking at my part in things when I was going through those resentment lists and my sexual conduct and my fears lists and everything like that. And I just wrote down all, you know, all the drug dealers that I robbed that robbed me back, you know what I mean? The people, the family members that I hurt, the girls I lied to, you know, X, Y, and Z, the people in the program that I talked trash about or, you know, whatever it was, the harm was. And I made a list of those people, and I made an exact nature. And it wasn't really an issue for me to find the willingness, because I was willing to do whatever my sponsor told me to do, because at that point I'd had enough opportunity and practice and experience in here that hope in the step 2 would really kind of turn into faith, right? That I just know it's going to be okay. If NA tells me to do it, it's going to be okay, because I haven't been steered wrong yet. And step 9, I got the opportunity, you know, we cut that list down a lot, and there were certain people that needed not just the amends of me staying clean and not repeating the behavior anymore, but needed me to actually, I needed to have an acknowledgement. It's not like me, the amends for me, 9th step is not about saying sorry. Everybody knows I'm sorry. I've been sorry for years, right? You ain't shit. You're sorry as hell. I know all that kind of stuff, right? But it's more about certain situations with people that were still in my life, like my mother and my younger brother and stuff that I'd put through a lot. I needed an acknowledgement both for me to get that stuff off my chest and to let go of some of that shame and let go of some of that guilt, right? But also maybe give them the opportunity to vent out those feelings that we hadn't discussed before. And I needed to sit down with them and say, hey, you know I did this and I know I did that, and I know I wasn't there for you for this amount of time, and I didn't show up, and the birth, you know, holidays I ruined, and the Christmases I didn't show up for, and all the things that were just always about me. It was always about me and how I couldn't show up for anything, and I needed the opportunity to say that stuff because I was still carrying all that stuff around with me and it was weighing me down. And you know, I found a lot of freedom in doing my first 9th step, and I've worked another one since then, and found a lot of freedom in that one as well. And so that kind of brings me to 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, 10 for me, the maintenance steps in 10, 11, 12 is, you know, there's an IP called Living the Program that I use as kind of like, the basis for my 10th step, right? And there's two parts of the 10th step. You know, there's the regular. You know, if I had experience continuously looking at my part in things and inventorying my part in things, and if I'm doing the next right thing and really working a strong third step, I'm not going to have to work the second part where I immediately tell people I'm wrong. But I'm a human being, right? So thank God there's a 10th step and I don't have to mess every, you know, I act out. It happens, right? I'm a human being. I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I act out sometimes, and I can't just wait till the next time I get to a 9th step to make that things right, or I have no relationships left, right? So the 10th step gives me the opportunity to man up and say, hey, I messed up, right? On the job, I hate getting called out if I did something wrong. I immediately want to throw somebody else under the bus, right? How somebody else's fault, you know, married into, you know, and is amazing to me that if I just say, hey, you know what, I'm new and I made a mistake and I did this, and then it just smooths it out, it's okay. You know, people aren't saying, oh, you did this, you can't work here anymore, and all these crazy fears that I create in my head, you know. And again, when I read that IP, living the program, right, when I'm saying yes to a lot of those things and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm doing the next right thing and going to meetings, calling my sponsor and all that stuff that I do to maintain my spiritual conditioning, I have pretty good days at the end of the day, right? And I don't find myself having to acknowledge that I did something wrong to people because I'm not walking around harming people like I used to, right? Step 11 kind of prepped me for step 12, where, you know, I've been here for a little bit, you know, I'd had a few years, right? I've gotten some stuff, right? We get gifts in here, right? We start looking better, start feeling better. Start getting money in our pockets, right? Relationships start lasting. We go on vacations and stuff like that. And it's easy, for me, it was easy to see how it could be really easy to drift out of here, right? Things get busy, right? I got relationships now. I'm in a relationship, you know. It's easy to step back and say, I'm cured, you know, or whatever, create, you know, lies that my head will tell me. And so that's kind of where, for me, step 11 just says, hey, man, you need to stay connected to this program. And you need to stay connected to your higher power, right? Which for me is my predecessors and the program of Narcotics Anonymous, the spiritual principles and the steps, which is kind of like the key to recovery for me is vigilance, right? And it says that it doesn't matter how much clean time I have, right? It's a just for today program that's based upon spiritual freedom and how free I am in my own skin, right? In my heart, in my head. And I continue to work on that relationship in order to be a better help and serve the newcomer, you know. So I got to step 12, and I could share a 12th step, you know, experience I had today. There's a lot of ways for me to work the 12th step, right? I sponsor 9 guys right now that I love. Yep, it's a lot of work. and they're crazy. And right, we work steps, right, most of us. And there's sponsorship, right? I do H&I, and I bring a meeting into that same treatment center. I went into a million different times, right? And I go in there on the third Wednesday of the month, and I share the message there. And if somebody asks me to lead a meeting, I say yes. If they ask me to set, you know, give out key tags, I say yes. If I get to the meeting early and there's chairs to set up, I just do it, right? There's a lot of way, you know. And if I've worked a step in a meeting, and there's not a lot of other people that have worked that step, I'll share, right? There's a lot of ways to help the newcomer and the suffering addict. And the suffering addict can be anybody. Yeah, 25 years or 25 days.
That's right.
It's a just for today program, and it doesn't matter about the clean time, right? And I had a 12-step experience today where a newcomer called me and said, you know, he's just coming back from a relapse, and he's here at the convention, and he called me and said, hey, I just went into a jacket in my trunk, and there's a rig and a bag of heroin in the pocket, you know. Can you help me out? Yes, right? Yes, I'm going to. And I showed up, and I ground that heroin into a puddle, and I threw that rig out, right? And I didn't even think twice about doing it, right? It's just, there's different forms of the 12-step for me, and some of them are real frontline like that, where we got to go to somebody's, you know, somebody just gets out of treatment, we got to go to his house and help go through his room and throw out those paraphernalia and drugs and the dirty, nasty stuff like that, and picking people up from the street and trying to take them to the treatment center, get them checked into a hospital. You know, I have sponsees in here that, you know, I've gone in and out a long time, and we got to pick them up, and we got to take them to treatment. We got to take them to a hospital and just pull them out of the depths. And sometimes the 12th step is just picking up a call at 11:30 at night after I've had a long day being on the phone and working and doing all the stuff, you know, to be of service to other people. That makes my life so rich, and I don't feel like it. You know, sometimes I just don't feel like it. But I know that all the blessings I have in my life are because we do those kind of things in here, you know. So just kind of give you a snap picture of what my life is like now. And I came in here, I had nothing, right? I moved in that halfway house, and I jumped on food stamps immediately. And, you know, I got my little EBT card, and I had the clothes on my back, and that was it. And I got that little part-time cashier job at a grocery store. Within 5 years, I was the second youngest store manager in that company, right? And I met my wife when I had 11 months, and she's not one of us. And I just thought I was gonna get some booty, you know. And the first date I called my sponsor, you know what I mean. I said, you know, she wanted to go on a date, and I was like bragging about it, and he was like, hey man, why don't you just not sleep with her? And I said, listen, look, this whole sponsorship thing isn't working out, right? It's not me, it's you. You know, I'm just telling you right now, right? But and we went on this date, and I just blurted it all out there. I said, you know, I'm Alex, and I'm an addict, and I shot dope for all these years, and I sold drugs, and, you know, and blah, 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 you know what I mean? And I looked up, you know, and she was still there. And I said, well, we're getting married, you know? I'd love immediately, right? Because you know how we love in here, right? Because we feel the most feelings. And anyway, what my life is like today, right? You know, we got married 5 years later. I've been with her for about 7 years now, right? Never cheated on her, right? Monogamous relationship. I left that grocery store that I was running a couple years ago, and I started doing IT recruiting for the federal government. So I placed people at like FBI and Homeland Security, just this ridiculousness I have no business doing. Right? And you know, I've gotten to speak at conventions. You know, I've gotten to lead meetings. I've gotten the honor to sponsor guys and help share this message in here. Right? You know, I moved from the halfway house into a house with a couple other guys, right, into my own, and then my girl moved in, and then we moved into our own place, and, you know, I've gone on vacations, I got back into music, I'm in a band, we just released a new album, like, on Friday, and we get to open for bands, and we tour. It's just unreal dreams in here, right? And I just wanted to stay well, right? I just wanted to stop kicking, and I didn't know how to stop using, and I just wanted to stop being that same scared little boy that I was my entire life, you know, and it's, you know, and life shows up in here, you know. Life shows up in here. My wife and I decided we wanted to have a baby, and we started working on it a few months ago, and we were real frustrated, kind of having a tough time at it, and you know what I mean. I guess, you know, February 15th, she comes home, and she tells me she's pregnant, and I'm so excited, and you know, around like 6 or 7 weeks, she calls me, and her stomach had been hurting for a few days, and I got a call, and I was at work, and she woke up, and there was just blood on the bed, and she was freaking out, you know what I mean? So I rushed home, and I took her to the hospital. This is like a couple months ago, you know, and you know, we're so scared. We just jumped, you know, straight, you know, with all our hopes and excitement about this kid. You know, I've sat up late sitting in the other bedroom of my apartment thinking about asking me the crib, you know what I mean? We're going to have the changing table, you know, and all the hopes and excitements and dreams and everything like that, you know, and just crushed, just devastation that, you know, this miscarriage is coming and all the fear. And so, you know, we go to the doctor, and they're like, you know, well, it's a little too early to tell. You're going to have to wait 2 weeks and come back. And because I can't tell you, I mean, I've been through some stuff clean, but the fear of and just discomfort of sitting through those feelings, and I couldn't really share it about it with anybody, right? Because it was my wife's business. She wasn't comfortable sharing about it with anybody. The only person that knew was my sponsor. He's on vacation, right? And so I just did what I learned how to do through here, through the steps, right? What you guys taught me how to do, which is sit still. I just sit still, right? I've learned how to sit still in here, right? I've learned humility and discipline and patience and faith. Right, and I know that no matter what happens in here, no matter what life shows up, somebody else has been through it, right? And I know that it's going to be okay, right? Because it's never not been okay. And but I got to tell you guys, it was a long 2 weeks, and I went back to the OBGYN, and they're like, well, look, here's the deal. We're going to do the sonogram, and if you hear the heartbeat, you know, I mean, you're good in the clear, and if you don't, you know, you've got a miscarriage. And so we were waiting and waiting, and she's looking, and we finally heard this heartbeat, you know, and so, yeah, and, yeah, and, yeah, so October 26th, I'm having a boy, and I am so excited, right? Yeah, yeah, right, right. And so, you know, this, I got clean at 23, right? Stinky little junkie crawling out of the woods trying to come back into that same treatment center, to, you know, and it's like Narcotics Anonymous is the best thing going, right? Is the best thing in my life, hands down. Right, it's always been there for me. It's never steered me wrong, and I fell in love with this program so deeply, and I've never looked back. Right, meetings don't get old. I don't think about leaving. I don't even trip. Right, I don't even think about it because I know it's not better out there, and I know I can't. It's just, I was waiting for so long for the other shoe to drop. Right, I really was. I was waiting for some, and it just seemed too good to be true. right? It just seemed to be good. All just blessings and blessings and blessings, and I'm learning and I'm growing up, right? And I have all these friends and relationships, and things are staying, right? I've found consistency for the first time in my life. I found comfort in my own skin for the first time in my life. I found a guy who's worth loving and who's worth good things and who's worth being faithful to and who's okay just the way he is, right? And I stopped being that jealous, scared little boy what I was, and I started really enjoying it. I started enjoying the blessings, and eventually I realized the other shoe's not going to drop. Right? It's not going to drop if I keep doing the right thing, right? If I keep working these principles, working these steps and showing up, right, and giving. You know, the 12th step for me is my favorite step, and I say that because it's I've been given a gift that millions of people don't have, right? I've been given an answer that a lot of people need, and for me to keep that to myself when there's so many people that need that, right, is almost criminal in my mind, right? And they say, you know, a grateful addict never uses, and we keep what we have by giving it away. Right. Well, I want to keep what I have because what I got is good. Right. NA has given me a life that I just thought I was destined to die with a needle in my arm, and I didn't care if that was the case. You know, and NA has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, and all the promises have come true. Right. I have gotten freedom from active addiction, you know, and I just it's just so good in here. And for the first, you know, I was never excited about the future. I was never excited about my life. I just never thought there was anything to look forward to, and the idea that I can feel excited about what's next and I can move forward in my life and I can have faith today because of the steps in this program that I can live, you know, a healthy life as an emotionally mature adult, because you guys, the men in here, taught me how to grow up and be a man without, you know, my addiction running into me, right? Without just running into myself again and ruining stuff, and I've just been able to let go of the shame and just, you know, talk about lost dreams awakened. You know, my life is just so full and I'm so grateful. And, you know, I'm just so grateful to Narcotics Anonymous and my predecessors, the men and women who've come before us to teach me that there's another way to live that I didn't think was possible. Because for me in this addict, that ain't the last stop on the block, right? Because I tried everything else because I love to get high. All right, I just don't like what happens when I do, you know. And so, you know, with that, you know, I'll keep coming back. Thanks for my share. Yeah.